Laudato Jesus Christus. You're listening to Vatican Radio. I'm Phil Andrews. This morning I'm talking to Benedict Rogers, advocate for religious freedom with the British charity Christian Solidarity Worldwide, whose latest book, From Burma to Rome, A Journey into the Catholic Church, has been recently published by Gracewing. Ben, hello, and thank you for talking to Vatican Radio.
Thank you. My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Now, I understand you became a Christian whilst at university in 1994. Would I be correct in thinking it was also around this time that you came to know the work of Christian Solidarity Worldwide, and that it was your relationship with the charity which has shaped the whole direction of your life?
That's absolutely right. It was approximately a month after I became a Christian that I heard Christian Solidarity Worldwide's patron, Baroness Cox, who's a member of the British House of Lords and a tireless and courageous campaigner for human rights and religious freedom. I heard her speak in my college chapel as an undergraduate and had an overwhelming sense that this was something I needed to engage with, and spoke to her afterwards. And here I am, more than 20 years later, still involved with Christian Solidarity Worldwide.
As part of your work with the charity, you have, of course, had to travel to many parts of the world where religious freedom is severely under threat. I noticed that Lord Alton has remarked how your witnessing of the plight of persecuted Christians brought you to a realization that, as he put it, a faith worth dying for might be a faith worth living for. What was it about the witness of Catholics in particular that made you explore the faith? Indeed, are there any particular individuals who stand out as beacons for you in this journey?
Yes, there are certainly a number of people who were influential on my journey. I think there were several who were influential before I realized I was even exploring the Catholic faith, and some of those would include my close friend Shabaz Bhatti, who I worked with very closely in Pakistan for 5 years when he was a grassroots activist for religious freedom. He went on to become Pakistan's Minister for Minorities Affairs and was tragically assassinated in 2011, and there is now a cause for his canonization that's started. But I worked very closely with Shabaz before I was conscious of exploring the Catholic faith, but I think subconsciously he had a deep impact on me. Similarly, his colleague in Pakistan, his colleague and mentor, Group Captain Cecil Chowdhury, who was really a national war hero in Pakistan, was a fighter pilot in the Pakistani Air Force, highly decorated in several of the India-Pakistan wars, had some heroic stories of his Air Force career, but was then denied promotion in the Air Force by the dictator of Pakistan at the time, Zia-ul-Haq, on the sole grounds that because he was a Christian, he should not rise to higher ranks in the Air Force. And so Cecil resigned from the Air Force in protest at that and became one of the country's leading voices on human rights and religious freedom. And Cecil and Shabaz worked very closely together, and Cecil was a devout Catholic as well. And so he was a key inspiration to me. The other people prior to my, if you like, my conscious journey of exploration that with hindsight I realized were sowing the seeds for that journey include a wonderful sister in East Timor called Sister Lourdes, who I worked with very closely in East Timor for a number of years. She is sort of a Mother Teresa kind of character, and if you go to East Timor and ask anyone about her, everybody would know her and love her. She's quite inspirational. Similarly, East Timor's bishop, Bishop Carlos Bello, who I had the privilege of meeting, and a number of other Catholics in that country. And then I came to a more conscious, proactive exploration of the Catholic faith, and that came about through my relationship with Burma's Cardinal Charles Bow, and a conversation one particular evening which had a profound effect in starting my journey of exploration.
And indeed, your close relationship with Cardinal Bow is evident in that you elected to be received into full communion by his hand and in his cathedral church in Rangoon.
That's correct. And how that came about, some people might ask, why wasn't I simply received in my parish church in England? The reason I was received into the church in Rangoon was because one particular evening, about 2 years prior to my eventual reception into full communion, I had had dinner with Cardinal Bow. I'd known him for some years prior to that, but we were having dinner one evening, and there was something about him and his boldness and courage. And I think one of the key things about all the people I've just described is their combination of deep spirituality and deep faith, combined with a real courage in speaking out, particularly on issues of human rights and social justice. And that blend of spirituality and the church's social teaching was very attractive to me. But that particular evening with Cardinal Beau, something he said made me ask him a question, which I was, at the time, I think was a question more out of curiosity than intention. By that I mean I was not intending to become a Catholic at that time, but perhaps subconsciously something else was going on. But I asked him the question, if somebody who is already a Christian wanted to become a Catholic and be received into the Catholic Church, what would they need to do? And I was probably expecting a sort of long procedure, but instead his answer was beautiful in its simplicity, but also deeply profound. He said simply, when a person can accept the teachings of the Catholic Church, they're ready to become a Catholic. But he then added something I didn't expect him to say, which was, if you ever find yourself in that position, I would receive you into the church here in Burma. And that had two specific impacts on me. The first was what a beautiful invitation and very, very appropriate and symbolic given my whole relationship with the country of Burma. I've worked on Burma for almost 20 years. I've traveled to the country and its borders more than 50 times. I've actually been deported from Burma twice as well, although I'm able to go there regularly now. So it was very appealing from that point of view. But my second thought was that in itself isn't a good enough reason to become a Catholic, just because I like one particular archbishop. He wasn't cardinal at the time. And because I have an association with one particular country, that in itself isn't enough. And therefore, if I want to take his invitation at all seriously, even if I end up not accepting it, that was my thought at the time, but if I want to give it the consideration it deserves, I need to explore this in a much more proactive way. And so I then went on a two-year journey of very active exploration, reading as widely as possible. I read the entire catechism. I read the entire compendium of the social doctrine of the church. I read everything from Pope Benedict to Thomas Merton to Scott Hahn, Malcolm Muggeridge, and a whole host of other writers, which I refer to in my book, encyclicals and all sorts of things, plus talking regularly with Catholic friends. I had two Catholic friends in particular who were wonderful and would meet with me regularly, and I would just fire all sorts of difficult and challenging questions, and they helped me walk through some of the questions I had. My parish priest was hugely supportive, and I met with him one-to-one regularly, and I also went on a RCIA Evangelium course. And at the end of those 2 years, I went back to Cardinal Beau and said, if your invitation is still open, I'd like to accept it. So it was that conversation 2 years prior to the eventual reception into the church that sparked the active journey, although, as I say, there were things going on which, with hindsight, and I now realize we're sowing the seeds for that.
Indeed, in writing your book, you're eager to ensure that ultimately you put across the fact that it isn't a book about you, but about God's work in your life. And when you talk about your conversion, you always give credit to God first. So with your work with Christian Solidarity Worldwide, you obviously have come to know a number of politicians and public figures, and indeed count them as personal friends. However, I think your friendship with many of them is on a more profound level than being merely social. How have these relationships helped you in your own personal discernment, and how, too, are they an essential part of your work defending the human rights of religious groups abroad?
Well, you're absolutely right that, and I'm glad that it comes through that I wanted to give credit to God and not to focus on myself in the book. And in fact, I was actually very reluctant initially to write the book when it was first suggested to me by both Cardinal Beau and Lord Alton, and then that suggestion was confirmed by several other people who I spoke to. I initially was reluctant because I didn't want to write a book about my story, but I then came round to the idea that there would be value in telling the story with the emphasis on the stories of the people whom God has used to influence and inspire me on my journey. And as you say, as well as people in places of persecution and conflict. Some of the other people that have been important in the journey have been people in public life. They include, obviously, Lord Alton, perhaps the most well-known and high-profile Catholic politician in Britain today. He was for many years in the House of Commons. He's been in the House of Lords now for quite some years. And he's the leading voice in Britain on really two main issues, the pro-life issue and international human rights, not just the persecution of Christians, but religious freedom and other human rights more broadly as well. And I've worked very closely with him on North Korea. I've traveled with him to North Korea. We've worked closely on Burma, on China, and on other areas. And he in particular was a key influence, both in showing me the importance of being in politics for the right reasons, using a position in politics to do good and to speak the truth and to stand up for principles and values, even when it might cost you something. He, as listeners may well know, took a very strong stand when his previous party, the Liberal Democrats, adopted a very strongly pro-abortion platform, and he announced that he was resigning from the party and resigning as a member of parliament. He had been tipped potentially as a future leader of that party, so the fact that he took that stand was very inspiring. Other things he's done in his life and things that he and I have worked on together have been a great inspiration in seeing how a person of faith can make a difference in the political arena. Other people in public life that have also been important, I've come to know Anne Widdecombe, another of Britain's leading Catholics and herself a convert from the Anglican Church. And again, her principled position has always been very inspiring to me. Congressman Chris Smith in the United States has been a tremendous champion, again, of those two issues of the pro-life cause and international human rights, and I've had the privilege of meeting him a number of times. And then other Catholics in other parts of the world, Martin Lee, the founder and leader of Hong Kong's movement for democracy, is a devout Catholic. And there's one other person that I feature in the book who's not in politics but has been in public service, and that's a man called Colonel Chris Keeble, who led the parachute regiment of the British Army in the most famous battle in the Falklands War, the Battle of Goose Green. And on the battlefield, he had both a profound spiritual experience, which I describe in the book, but also a real wrestling with the issue of the ethics of war and what to do in war. And he ended up taking the surrender of the Argentinians and has a profound story of how that came about. So all these people are people I've been privileged to know and work with and consider my friends. And they're all people that have influenced me in that combination of spirituality and political action and how one can, as a person of faith, do a lot in public life, in politics or other areas of public life to advance the values we stand for.
Last week, Burma's first civilian president in half a century, Tin Jaw, was inaugurated. What's your opinion on this? Surely this is a step in the right direction for Burma.
It's certainly a step in the right direction. The fact that a civilian Democrat with a small d, has been elected, and a Democrat government, Democrat-led government, has been elected, is certainly a wonderful step forward. But it is important to remember the huge challenges the country faces, continuing conflict in the ethnic states, rising religious intolerance in the form of what I can only describe as militant Buddhist nationalism that's having an effect both on Muslims and Christians in the country, huge issues with poverty, with drugs, with corruption, and a whole host of other challenges, plus the fact that this new government is actually very constrained by the constitution. The military has not gone away. This is a sort of hybrid government rather than what we would consider a full democratic government, because under the constitution, firstly, Burma's democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi is not able to be president, even though she won an enormous mandate in the elections last November, because the constitution has a clause that says that the president cannot be someone who has either been married to or has dependents or offspring who are foreign nationals. And she was married to a British man, Michael Iris, who died some years ago, but her children are British citizens, and for that reason she's not able to become president. Plus the fact that under the Constitution, the military is given control of three key ministries, Home Affairs, Border Affairs, and Defence. And they have 25% of the seats reserved for them in Parliament, and they have one of the two vice president positions, and the person that has been put into that position by the military is known as a hardliner. So all of these will constrain how much the National League for Democracy, Aung San Suu Kyi's party, the majority party in the government, can actually deliver, because it's a very fragile situation and they will have to try to keep the military on board. The military also, under the Constitution, there's a clause that allows them to seize back power in the form of a coup in the name of protecting stability. So all these things make it a fragile situation, and I think the international community needs to be aware of that and give the government as much support as possible, continue to provide advice and recommendations and to hold the government to account on addressing some of the challenges I've mentioned, but also be understanding that this is not the end of the journey for Burma. It's simply a new chapter.
Ben, thank you for that fascinating insight. And indeed, thank you for talking to us today on Vatican Radio. The story of Benedict Rogers' work defending the persecuted church and how it led him into the Catholic Church, From Burma to Rome, A Journey into the Catholic Church, is published by Gracewing and is available from Amazon. For Vatican Radio, I'm Phil Andrews. Laudato Jesus Christus.